Today, more weak consumer news and the pressure on the mutuals. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. APRA released their quarterly property exposures data to June 2019 today. We can see some of the moving parts in the industry, though only at an aggregated level. And at the top level, we can see the impact of APRA first imposing restrictions on investment lending in 2015 and later in 2017 on interest-only loans. The subsequent loosening of standards, which APRA introduced recently, has yet to hit the statistics. We can see that mortgage lending growth did slow thanks to their measures, with total ADI mortgages at $1.67 trillion, comprising $547 billion of investor loans and $359 billion of interest-only loans. This translates to 32% of loans being for investment purposes, which is still too high in my view, and 21.4% being interest-only. Not disclosed is the distribution of interest-only loans between owner-occupied and investment loans, but we can assume most are investment-related. We can pull out the same data for the four major banks. Here, total loans are $1.33 trillion, with $452 billion being investment loans and $303 billion being interest-only, giving a 34% share of investment loans and 22.8% of interest-only loans. So they still have a larger share of investment loans and interest-only loans relative to the market. No bank-level data is disclosed, though we know Westpac has the largest share of investment loans, and we assume interest-only loans too. We can then look at the new flows across the various lender types. The flow of new investment loans is running at 32% in June and is rising, and we expect it will be even higher next time as the APRA loosening is executed. As a result, mutuals are writing a lower share of investment loans now. The proportion of new loans via brokers varies by lender category, with foreign banks sitting at around 65%, compared with the 48% of major banks. And mutuals are seeing a fall as competition from majors increases. The proportion of new interest-only loans is at around 17% for most lender types, with foreign banks writing less, and mutuals are writing more interest-only loans now. Loans written outside serviceability has fallen across the industry, although major banks are still at 4.7% and above the other lender types. Mutuals are writing more as they attempt to gain share in the increasingly competitive market. There are higher risks, of course, in these loans. And finally, we can look across the loan-to-value bands at the time of origination. Major banks are writing around 7.4% of loans above 90%, compared to the mutuals at 13%, once again showing mutuals are having to break their own rules more often to win business. In the 80 to 90% bands, majors are at 16.1% and rising, and nearly half of all loans written are around 50% of loan-to-value ratios. Here, the best deals are on offer. So refinancing is quite strong, and there is little variation across the lender segments. The lower loan-to-value bands are around 26%, with other banks, including regionals, a little higher. So this data suggests that mutuals are under pressure. And the effect of the APRA tightening is obvious, but the question now is, how will this change in the new you-set-the-risk environment? It appears from our data, lenders are more willing now, so we'll be watching the serviceability and LVR metrics ahead, but loan volumes remain constrained, which will limit potential excesses, at least for a time. Meanwhile, the consumer mood has lapsed back into slightly negative territory again, according to the latest Westpac Melbourne Institute Consumer Survey, which was released today. And they highlight continued pressure on family finances and concerns about the near-term outlook, both weighing on sentiment. The September survey includes additional questions on the tax offset payments the federal government began making with tax refunds from July the 1st. Just over 16% of consumers reported receiving a payment, and they estimate that around 30% of households are likely to receive a meaningful rebate. So this survey indicates that about half of eligible consumers have already received a payment. Among those that had received a payment, 29% plan to spend it all, and a further 16% plan to spend over half, but the remainder, more than 53%, plan to spend less than half, including around 25% who were planning to save the full payment. And responses to additional questions on news recall showed rising concerns about the economy and the global backdrop. The highest recall for the month was news on economic conditions at 33% and international conditions at 19.8%, the latter hitting a four-year high. These proportions are up significantly from a year ago at 20.5% and 8.3% respectively. And news on both was widely assessed as more unfavourable, with the proportion reporting unfavourable doubling over the year. There was a comparable lift in the proportion reporting employment news as unfavourable as well, and these concerns about the state of the economy, the international backdrop, and employment are seeing consumers becoming more cautious about their finances. The sub-index tracking expectations for finance over the next 12 months declined to 2.2% to be down 9.4% since June and at a four-year low. And the subgroup details suggest a range of factors may be contributing, including concern about jobs, persistent weak wages growth, and low returns on financial assets, weighing on sentiment amongst those at or near retirement age. Consumer assessments of current finances also deteriorated slightly. The finance versus a year ago sub-index declined to 2.5% to 84.3, and while this is above the low of 80.2 registered back in April, it is still a weak read, well below the long-run averages. And it's particularly disappointing given the support that should be coming through from the combined effect of policy interest rate cuts and tax relief, and from stabilising housing markets. And a weaker near-term outlook for the economy has also weighed in on sentiment. The economy next 12 months sub-index is down 3.1%. And the disappointing June quarter national account update released in the middle of the survey week undoubtedly had an effect. The report showed annual growth slowing to just 1.4% over the year, the weakest pace since the GFC. Despite this, expectations for the economy are still comfortably above their July low, when the Reserve Bank's back-to-back rate cuts appeared to have badly rattled consumers. Interestingly, consumers' longer-term expectations for the economy have been both steadier and more positive. The Economy Next 5 Years sub-index was the only component to post a rise this month, up 2.1% and up 6.7% since July, to a level still comfortably above its long-run average. That may be an indication that some of the difficulties currently facing the economy are expected to dissipate over time. And consumers' attitudes towards spending dipped in September. The time to buy a major household item sub-index declined 2.8%, unwinding all of last month's modest gains and taking the sub-index well below its long-run average again. Spending on discretionary and big-ticket durable items has been particularly weak over the last year. Consumers' job loss fears remain slightly elevated, and the Westpac Institute Unemployment Expectations Index has essentially unchanged, holding at 133.5 in September, a touch above the long-run average of 130. And remember, a higher reading indicates that more consumers expect unemployment to rise in the year ahead. The index remains about 10% above the levels prevailing late last year, a clear sign of cooling conditions in the labour market. Housing-related sentiment recorded a more mixed month after the clear positive results in June and July and August. The time to buy a dwelling index declined 2.9%, reversing most of last month's gains. At 123.3, the index is still above its long-run average of 120 and near a five-year high. That said, the sizable 7-8% declines in Sydney and Melbourne suggest the nascent recovery in prices in these markets may already be starting to dampen buyer enthusiasm. In contrast, consumers' house price expectations have continued to firm. The Westpac Melbourne Institute of House Price Expectations Index posted a further 3.9% up in September to be a spectacular 45.8% higher since May. And all major states recorded a lift in price expectations this month. Expectations posted a particularly strong 6.7% gain in New South Wales. And responses to additional questions on the wisest place for savings showed a slight easing in risk aversion, although it remains very high by historical standards. Consumers still heavily favour safe options. 61% nominating deposits, superannuation, or paying down debt as the best place for savings, compared to 64% in June. And the proportion favouring real estate nudged up, but only slightly, from 10% to 12%. And the proportion favouring shares dipped slightly from 10% to 9%. Perhaps most tellingly, some 9% of consumers simply nominated don't know, and that's the highest reading on records, going right back to 1974. And just before I go, here are a couple of items that DFA viewers have sent me today. I think they're quite significant, so I wanted to share them with you straight away. Firstly, I found this very interesting short video from the European Parliament. And I'll discuss this in more detail in a future post, but I thought you might be interested to hear somebody in the parliament there really bagging the central banks and blaming them for a lot of the economic issues that we face around the world. And by the way, he still believes in fractional reserve banking, but of course the truth is that banks create loans and therefore credit, as we've discussed on a number of occasions.
Commissioner, Mr. President, I rise again, I'm afraid, to make the same old hoary speech that I've been making here for several years, and that is, it is my opinion that you do not really understand the concept of banking. All the banks are broke. Bank Santander, Deutsche Bank, Royal Bank of Scotland, they're all broke. And why are they broke? It isn't an act of God. It isn't some sort of tsunami. They're broke because we have a system called fractional reserve banking, which means that banks can lend money that they don't actually have. It's a criminal scandal, and it's been going on for too long. To add to that problem, you have moral hazard, a very significant moral hazard from the political sphere. And most of the problem starts in politics and central banks, which are part of the same political system. We have counterfeiting, sometimes called quantitative easing, but counterfeiting by any other name. The artificial printing of money, which if any ordinary person did, they'd go to prison for a very long time. And yet governments and central banks do it all the time. Central banks repress the amount of interest that rates are, so we don't have the real cost of money. And yet we blame the real retail banks for manipulating LIBOR. The sheer effrontery of this is quite astonishing. It's central banks. It's central banks that manipulate interest rates, Commissioner. And plus, underneath all this, we talk loosely, in a rather cavalier fashion, do we not, about deposit guarantees. So when banks go broke through their own incompetence and chicanery, the taxpayer picks up the tab. It's theft from the taxpayer. And until we start sending bankers, and I include central bankers and politicians, to prison for this outrage, it will continue.
And the second piece of interesting news, again provided by one of our viewers, relates to news out of the US that they may well be experimenting with a dollar note that effectively loses value the longer you hold it. In other words, if you receive $100 today but don't spend it in a few weeks' time, the value of that note goes down to, let's say, $95. And if you hold it for longer, it goes down again. So this is another attempt to try and get people to spend rather than to hold cash. And it could indeed be an alternative option to a cash ban. Now, of course, you will understand that I think that this is a very bad idea. And it's once again goes right back to this question of why and how we would ban cash. And of course, it goes back to needing to take interest rates ever lower, maybe even negative, and to try and push people to spend rather than to save. And I'll have more to say on this in a future post. And just a quick call out to those two viewers who sent me those news snippets. So standing back, the economy continues to wobble along, consumers are less confident, and the lending now is the question. If in fact confidence starts to weaken again and demand for property comes off, despite lower interest rates, then the chances are home prices will slide quicker than I was expecting previously, and the growth in credit may be lower than many are thinking. If, on the other hand, credit continues to grow and more strongly, then perhaps prices will be a little stronger. So it's going to be very important to watch the data over the next 2 to 3 months as we come into summer. Of course, you'll get the latest and greatest data here on DFA. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.